Hi, my name's Tash and I'm an alcoholic.
And my name's Caitlin and I'm not an alcoholic. And this is an exploratory podcast looking at alcoholism, mental health and addiction within the arts and all of the things that make us question.
Why am I like this?
Good. How are you?
All right. Well, because last week's episode was pretty heavy.
Yes.
And it kind of bummed me out for a couple of days afterwards because I was like, oh yeah, everything is awful.
Oh, Tash.
But it's okay. It's just a couple of days of like processing, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like this podcast sort of forces me to dredge up a lot of things.
Yeah.
That I think I've dealt with.
Yes.
And then I realized that I have not at all.
Mm.
So it's kind of a good thing. Like, yeah. You know, that's what it's all about. But I'm feeling much better now.
Yeah.
How have you been? Moving house.
Yeah, moving house, which is fun.
You'll be all moved in when this comes out.
Oh my gosh, I will, hopefully.
We like the first week.
Touch wood. Yeah, I've been good. Like, I've had a bit of an endometriosis flare-up, which
is
a bit shitty. And if you follow me online, I can't believe I just said those words. I talked a bit about mobility and how, like, I've never had my endometriosis affect my mobility before, and I kind of had that earlier this week. And that was a bit of a...
Threw you a bit.
Yeah, a bit of a shitty learning curve, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah.
But I had quite a few people reach out to me afterwards and thank me for being vulnerable about that.
It's wild. Yeah.
Quite nice. Swings and roundabouts. My body's having a bit of a time.
How are you feeling mentally?
Happening. Yeah, good.
Good.
Yeah. Huh. Good.
I think that's a good thing. Like, especially if you've been having a bad physical time, the fact that you're keeping chipper and good about it.
My, like, mental brain and thinking is very much being like, French starts in a week.
Well, that's a good segue, actually.
Yeah.
Great intro. Yeah. We've got a guest here today. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Tash. How are you going?
Good. So this is Laura from Big Mood, who we were really interested to talk to because I found your Instagram a while ago now, and it was started off with just a series of quotes that I kept reading, and I was like, why is this my life? And I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
I follow the Adelaide Fringe tag, as y'all should. There's some great content there. A great way to find performers as well that you might not always see.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw this little page, and it's literally all about my life, it feels like. So do you want to tell us a little bit about Big Mood?
Yeah, so Big Mood is myself and Stephanie Mitchell, and so we met working together at Gluttony in 2017.
That's a fringe venue in Adelaide.
Yeah. So we were both on front of house together, and we would, you know, head out to the Fringe Club, make new friends, had a great, absolute ball of a time. We got along like a house on fire, and she had previously gone over to Edinburgh to work at the Festival Fringe over there, which
is
you know, twice the size of Adelaide.
Yeah.
It's the biggest in the world. It's absolutely insane. And towards that second half of that Fringe season, I was sexually assaulted by a guy that she had been seeing at the time, very casually. And it was probably 12 months later that I realized that he was probably just trying to get with me to upset her.
Oh, God.
But it took me a long time to even figure that out. But by the end of this festival, I had gone to see so many solo shows. I'd gone to see, I can't remember her name, but this brilliant Canadian comedian who spoke about her parents' alcoholism and then how that affected her understanding of drinking culture when she then came of age. And that resonated with me just so much.
Was it quite shocking to hear, or?
It was, but then at the same time, she's funny.
Sure.
So it was very accessible. It was a great laugh, as well as it being a very important topic.
Yeah.
And so by the end of that, and after I had this particular sexual assault incident, I started talking to close friends and describing what had happened to me and being like, it's really messed me up. And this guy, like, he didn't, any trigger warnings here, but he didn't even kiss me on the mouth.
Yeah.
But it was still, you know, one of the most devastating things that's happened. And I started thinking, oh, well, maybe I could put this into a show the way that I've seen all these other strong solo performers do. And Steph, having been to Edinburgh before, suggested that we go over there. And within 6 months, we were both over there working, performing, being over in Edinburgh. And Steph's a graphic designer by trade, so she's always done all of my graphics works.
Mm.
towards the end of 2017, early, maybe 2018, we were like, well, we're doing it now anyway. We're doing, you know, Melbourne Fringe, we're doing Adelaide Fringe.
Yeah, you're in the circuit.
Edinburgh. So we just sort of formalised it and then got to a point where we would then sort of take on other shows that we could help produce, particularly for people who aren't based in Adelaide, just to help out on the ground before Fringe starts and then once they get here and give them any
little
tips or tricks.
Network.
Yeah, as best as we can with what we've got.
So. Have you found anywhere else, like in Melbourne or Edinburgh, like a something similar, a support system or almost like a, you know, like a HR kind of for artists or?
It's never been something that I've actively found. Mm. I mean, I haven't been looking and there probably are things that do exist. And all of the fringes do have quite solid companies behind them that, you know, that do offer services and have support networks in there. But I think definitely in my experience, I never stumbled across them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I suppose this year what Steph and I are doing with our mental health booklet that we're putting up, we're hoping that that is going to be stumbled upon by as many people that are working and performing at the festival as possible.
Yeah, people who might not know they need it. Like, I think that's a thing with this podcast as well. People listen and they hear things they didn't know they needed to hear. And
I think it is worth saying that if you are an Adelaide artist, and this I only know this because I was on the in a department that was in the HR team for the Fringe last year, is that they do have Honeypot. And
yes,
like the
Honeypot.
Fringe, like the artists area where there are some stuff in place, so like different workshops and stuff like that.
Yeah, and we've incorporated that in the back couple of pages of the booklet as well. Yeah. So we've been collaborating with Fringe to make sure that it is obvious as well the way that they support the artists, which is great.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about the booklet, the kind of content that you're looking to have, and I guess why that content is so important.
Mm-hmm. So it was really important to us. Really to just make a formal acknowledgement of how mentally exhausting Fringe can be.
Yes.
Because it's one thing to look at it and be like, oh, yeah, it's a month where you might be performing every single day. You might be working 8 to 12-hour days on your feet as front of house all day. It's easy to look at it and be able to quantify the physical exhaustion you might be able to feel, but it's so difficult to understand the emotional and the mental upheaval that you have to go through. And it's just this relentless month. And I think what I always found really difficult was you have these incredible highs as well. Mm-hmm. As a performer in particular, I found that if I had a good show, I was basically on another planet.
Yeah,
I was in such a great mood. And then, you know, and you're surrounded by people who perhaps you only see once a year at the festival, who live in all these interesting places, who do all these incredible things. And there's so much love in the Fringe community in general.
Definitely.
And so you're surrounded by this amazing, incredible, supportive network of people. You might be killing it in your shows. You might be killing it at work. You might be selling out whatever it is that you're pushing, which feel amazing. But then when you add into this, you know, this real party culture and a lot of late nights, and particularly if you're someone who's also working a day job on the side, if you could call it that, then you're just sort of like burning the candle at the 11,000 ends that you've given it. And it's exhausting. And by the end of it, you know, you've probably had a cry or two throughout it just out of this exhaustion. Mm. And then, you know, particularly if you're from Adelaide or if you're staying in Adelaide, then you turn around and the tents are gone from the parks. The people are back in their own corners of the world and it's just this
lonely,
bizarre, really empty, this huge adjustment in and out of the festival.
Yeah.
And so because it's the first year that we're putting it together, one of the biggest things was just creating this acknowledgement, like what we do is pretty full on.
Yeah.
Give yourself a break wherever you can and support the people around you. And, you know, we've given practical tips about, you know, please don't go out and drink every night, even if you think you can handle it. Like, could be better if you don't.
Yeah.
Could be better for you if you don't.
Because FOMO is such a thing with that as well, though.
Huge.
Like, you know, because as you said, it's such a short period and it's such a short amount of time and you want to experience everything and see everyone. And, you know, if a performer that, you know, lives in the UK is like, oh, come out for a drink. Come on. It seems so difficult to say, oh, no, it seems almost selfish to say, oh, I got to go and look after myself. Sorry, I don't have time for you. You know, like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, letting people know, I suppose, that that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to get out of that mindset, that feeling that it's selfish if you just take 10 minutes out to yourself or take a night off or take yourself to the beach or something. But that could also just be so regenerative and as this reset button for yourself as well, so that you can keep performing at your best and keep working your butt off for the rest of the frame to kill it. Because that's what we're there for, exactly. is to kill it.
Yes.
I think it's really interesting, this is something that's come up a couple of times already, is the way that people within the arts and fringe will use humour as a coping mechanism for this. Mm-hmm. Like, I found myself in the last couple of days, like, having a conversation with people who are involved in the fringe of me, like, oh, what are you doing? And they're like, I'm doing X, Y, Z, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, when are you going to sleep? And they're like, never.
Yeah, it's a joke.
Yeah.
It's like an in-joke between all of the creatives in this sort of circuit.
Mm.
It's like common knowledge that you don't sleep and you don't eat and you will have a breakdown and you will cry every night.
Yeah.
And we all just kind of accept that and go,
silly.
Artist life. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be like that. And I guess that's the whole point of this booklet as well, is like, you have alternatives. Like, you can look after yourself a bit better.
Yeah.
Like, looking after yourself, I feel like, is becoming kind of cool now, you know, like self-care and mm-hmm. like self-awareness is becoming quite trendy in a way, and people are kind of getting on board with it. I think it's becoming less and less, air quotes, cool to be like the renegade drunk performer who's always out on the lash and always getting into trouble. Like, that's, I think, not as popular as it used to be,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's just...
Maybe because it's not as cool to me, I don't know. that might be a very personal opinion.
Yeah. No, I think it's less of a thing of coolness and more of a thing of, like, awareness and knowing the effects that that does have on your body and people actually talking about it for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not being like, wait, so I'm the only one who experiences this, right? And then you have, like, five friends be like, actually, no, I cried 20 minutes ago for the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, having that open awareness and conversation around it, like... It isn't cool to be burnt out and you don't have to be, and it's not a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very, like, slow cultural shift that I hope is happening, and I feel like this booklet will help that.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, as I definitely, as a conversation started, that would be brilliant for us.
Yeah.
And we've actually got a phone call last week from Safe Work SA that they were going to come up on board, and so we're actually going to be able to print 6,000 booklets.
Oh, my God. Amazing. Congratulations. That's so exciting.
Which is probably about 6,000 times bigger than we thought it was ever going to be for the first round. You know, 6 months ago we got a couple of $100 from our GoFundMe and I was crying. I was I was on a break from work and I was crying because I was like, we can actually – do something now. And I had in my head like 300. Like, can you imagine if we print 300 books?
Yeah.
And now it's got a zero on the end of it and it's doubled and
it's incredible.
It's just insane. And I'm so excited. I'm so excited to see people's responses to it.
Yeah.
And I'm really hoping at least some of the people that I do already know, that if they see this and if they see that this is what Steph and I have put together, and, you know, there's a bit of ourselves in it, obviously, as well. Is that then they feel comfortable, whether they would like to talk to me or whether they need to talk to somebody else about something that they're going through.
Yeah, it will be eye-opening.
Yeah, yeah. And I really hope that that it just helps with that shift into talking about it and trying to understand it a bit better as well.
I think trying to take the humour out of it, not out of it, but I guess...
I think it to extend beyond that humour. So you have that humour, and if that's your entry point,
drop the curtains on the humour.
Yeah.
Like, let the shit show happen.
What happens once the laughter dies out?
Yeah, genuinely. Like, exactly what happens when the fringe is over and you're just in that void of, did that even really happen? Like, and you kind of, I don't even work as a performer. I just work with all the performers. But I'm such an empath and I get energy from everyone. And so I'm having this great time for a month. And then all my friends disappear, you know? And it's like, oh, that's right. I have to look after myself again. Like, how boring. Mm. And, well, you know, like, it's...
We've had this conversation.
avoidance, clearly. And I realize that. But, again, like, looking after other people seems like such an easy thing to do. So where will you have your booklet? Like, for the people that are in Garnerland and Adelaide, where will they be able to find it?
So we've emailed and contacted with as many of the venues as we can, and we'll be dropping them off next week, hopefully just before opening night, and be just scattering them as far and wide as we can.
Yeah.
Some of the bigger spaces with multiple big venues and things like that, I'm hoping that I'll be able to find someone on their team that loves us enough to jump around into as many of those dressing rooms and spread them out around the place.
Great.
And then, you know, going through to all of the other, you know, the pubs and the other pop-up venues and that sort of thing across town. Fringe Club will hopefully have some around the place as well, and hopefully in the Fringe offices.
Yeah. So I'll be face painting in Fringe Club, so I'll have some. Amazing. I'll stick them next to my little... And I start some conversations while I'm glittering people. So how's your mental health?
I think it's a really good one too. It's like talking with a hairdresser. And yes. What comes out of a hairdresser is like everything.
Exactly. So if people are listening and they might be a Fringe venue or they might be involved, how can they contact you, or what's the best way for them to get in touch if they kind of want to see this content in their venues?
Well, we've got our website is bigmood.co.uk. And our general email is info@bigmood.co.uk. You can hunt us down on Instagram and Facebook as well. Yeah, so we've been, say, like pushing the content with some quotes from our performer friends from all over the place.
I think that's been the most relatable, because obviously I've hardly seen, you know, anything. But yeah, it's not those quotes, the way that they hit home is like, oh, that's right. I'm not alone. Everybody feels like this and none of us are doing anything about it. Like,
How
stupid and irresponsible is that? Like,
yeah.
When you know better, but you're still not doing better. And I guess on that topic, knowing better and not doing better kind of ties in nicely with your Fringe show. Parents.
Parents.
Families.
Yeah. Bless them. Yeah, I am premiering a brand new show this year. It is my first ever work that has a cast. So there are four, including myself. And it's been incredibly interesting because my previous shows that I've done, it's just been me telling stories and I can, like, that's fine. I just chat.
You don't have to be responsible for anyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's all my problem if it goes wrong.
Yeah.
And now I've got these other three actors up with me, and even writing it and trying to understand how those voices can be used to either directly or indirectly shape the other characters. It's been a huge learning curve.
A lot more to think about.
Loved it. And I mean, a lot of it is actually just verbatim quotes from my parents.
So I was going to ask, how much of it is directly pulled from your personal experience and how much of it is, creative license?
Huge. It'd be 70 or 80% probably verbatim.
Okay.
Honestly, most of the creative license that I've given myself has been in my own rebuttal.
Yeah.
Because when I'm in that situation in real life with my parents,
what you want.
I just can't do it.
Yeah.
Relatable.
I freeze or I almost start crying. Yeah. I get this. And it's been really interesting because, I mean, I moved out from home. I grew up in the country. So I moved to Adelaide about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was April last year that I spent maybe 10 days at home, and that was the longest time that I'd spent there since I left.
Mm.
And within the first 24 hours, I think I was in my bedroom with the door closed crying.
Yeah.
Like, I was 28 years old and just a dinner with my family, just the frustration that I felt towards them for them not listening to me, and then, you know, blaming me for being disrespectful when I felt like they weren't even hearing a word that came out of my mouth. It was
It's too relatable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm kind of, you know, using this to give myself some level of atonement, I think, as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the character I play isn't flawless either. You know, like, her drinking is discussed throughout it, often indirectly.
Okay.
Which I actually think is quite important.
Yeah.
But then there are some examples in there of things that I have done to embarrass myself at family events. That, you know, that my little brother's paying me out about, and you know, it's a really rough piece to perform as well.
Yeah, is it almost I hate overusing the word triggering, but do you find that sort of each time you write it or perform it or have to rehearse it, you kind of feel that pain again, or like you say, is it cathartic and kind of letting go almost?
Oh, it's both. It's so both of them, and it's a really interesting, because they're very. Those two things are very conflicting feelings. And so it's bizarre sitting in that chair and sitting at that table, and the poor actor who plays my dad. I get to a point where I get really angry about it because I know how stubborn and pig-headed my dad can be.
Yeah.
And if he's not giving me enough anger, I'm like, get angry. And I'm like hitting the table like, my dad is so unreasonable. Yeah. You need to be so unreasonable with me right now.
Yeah.
You're not listening to me, but I'm still the one who's being I get really caught up in it and swept up in it.
Just because it's for the first time, like, you are controlling the narrative, you are controlling the situation and the characters. Like,
I want to know about the setting because it's in someone's house.
Yes,
yeah,
it's not in your house, and it's like a max of 20 people audience.
Yeah, I've said 25, and I think I'm pushing it. I think we will
shoulders to shoulders.
See how that goes.
Yeah.
But I think that'll add to the, yeah, you know, this experience. Awkward, intimate.
Mm.
One of my actors called it spicy.
Ooh,
which
yeah,
I okay. liked. I mm-hmm. like that. I might, yeah, take that one. I'm using, yeah, my friend's apartment because she lives across the road from the garden. It's yeah.
perfect.
I mean, I'm sort of like just over the back way, but it's a great location. I actually was at her house trying to come up with how it was going to be staged, yeah. this show, and I was like, I don't know where I could do it because there aren't many venues around in Adelaide anymore mm. that help support, you know, emerging stuff or low risk, low yeah. cost stuff, which is what I need. And I think she just said, you could have it here. And I literally got out of my seat and I'm like, it's immersive. And it was this absolute light bulb moment. I'm like,
yeah.
that's what this piece has to be. It has to be people sitting next to you,
yeah.
eye level. We're not different. We're not over there up on a stage. Like the audience is there. Just with us.
Yeah.
And they have to listen to this ridiculous, close-minded, opinionated, racist, misogynistic mm. stuff. And they just have to sit there.
Yeah. So it's a family dinner setting, right?
Yeah.
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 So I think for me, having also not a great family background, family dinners are super traumatic because it's like I was forced out of my bedroom and out of my safe mm-hmm. space into this vulnerable space and then maybe peppered with questions where I could never give the right answer. Or I wanted to talk freely about something, but then somehow that was wrong or mm-hmm. I got in trouble for that. Mm. And then you want to say something about somebody's opinion or have a conversation, but then that's wrong. And then you have to ask to leave the table, but you're not allowed to. And it's this constant terrifying mm. for me. Like I hated it. That's my biggest fear is being at my own or somebody else's family dinner and those sort of things happening.
Like, yeah.
I mean, I will definitely be coming because yeah. I'm all about that. But yeah, I can just imagine for so many people it will be quite reminiscent of mm-hmm. of situations they've been through.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that because when I first wrote it, because it is so close to this particular month last year, I was starting to doubt it and I was like, oh, no one's going to get it. It's yeah. just going to be too local. It's just going to be me and everyone's, you know, going to think I'm an idiot for trying to write this down. But then I did a read through with a couple of friends of mine who I've performed with previously in Abbott the Musical a yeah. good couple of years ago. Cool. And the guy who read as the father character, as soon as we closed the script, he was like, look, if I do this, I can't have my parents come because my dad will think it's about him.
Wow.
And then that was this moment. I was like, okay.
I'm not alone in this.
yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that anyone else had seen the script at all as well. And, yeah. you know, we sort of chatted it and workshopped it a little bit immediately after that. But that comment
stuck with you.
Just really, yeah, hit home.
Yeah. And so have your parents? Laura's all ducked away there.
No.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel about this podcast. My parents don't know about this.
Mm.
It's the same. It's just me calling them out for all their shitty behaviour. Like,
yeah. And I haven't told them that I'm doing this show.
Yeah.
They know about the others that I'm doing. But, you know, I've like changed all of my privacy settings on Facebook yeah, wow, so I can okay. try to share it and talk about it without them knowing. Because, you know, I don't hate my parents at all. There are obviously aspects of their behaviour and of their mindset that I wish I could change magically, but I can't, and I know that. But even, you know, other work that I've done, and there'll be a line here or there that I've quoted from my parents that stuck out to me when I was growing up that quite affected me.
Yeah.
You know, my mum's then tried to call me out and be like, oh, well, you just completely misinterpreted that.
Oh, my God. So my mum's favourite line is, you have a very selective memory, Natasha.
Oh, yes.
I'm like, yeah, I remember the deep-seated trauma. I'm sorry that I don't remember the great times. Like, I remember all those horrific one-liners that mm-hmm. made me send me to my room.
Cut you. And just,
truly.
Yeah.
Like, I think adults forget how impressionable children are
mm-hmm.
and how the slightest little thing, even if they don't mean it that way, even if you did misinterpret it, even if you did misremember it, it put you in a place where you felt like that and still they didn't notice.
That's it. And I think that feeling is what you remember so strongly. Oh, like, yeah, you can remember the words and maybe that could end up being warped, but like the feeling that you felt when you real. Heard that, that's what you sort of, I guess, cling to you know, and that's what affects you ultimately. Yeah.
So the show is called Peach Cobbler.
Peach Cobbler.
Yes. When, where, if someone's listening and they're like, oh, I want to go see that.
So we are doing three nights. We're doing Friday the 21st of Feb, Thursday the 12th of March and Friday the 13th of March. Mm-hmm. Oh, Friday 13th, that's exciting.
Good one.
They're all at 7:30 p.m. Yeah. And we've called our venue The Living Room, which is outrageous, I know. Yes. Which is at 9 East Terrace, so just by East Terrace Continental. I've got...
Right. That is a good venue, yeah.
It's perfect. And I've got a nice little crew of friends who are helping out with sort of front of house duties, up and down elevators and that sort of stuff.
Great.
Very exciting.
I got a question. How... Sorry if this is scary... How would you feel if your parents saw it? Like if you were there one night and they rocked up and they walked into that room?
I honestly think I would have to ask them to leave.
Sure.
Really?
Okay.
I don't think I could let them watch it.
Yeah.
And it would probably need to be like a, look, if you really want to, I can send you the script, but it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Which is interesting. Like my first solo show where I talk about various instances of sexual assault, and I do need to trigger warning this next couple of minutes for mentions of rape.
Mm-hmm.
But I write about my ex-boyfriend raping me.
Mm.
And the point of that show is that it was sort of socially acceptable. You know, I didn't hit him. He didn't have to forcefully hold me down, all that sort of thing, which is why I didn't understand it as rape for years.
Yes. I think it's a very, very common situation.
Yeah. And so when I wrote that show, before I took that to Edinburgh, I knew that my parents were coming to Adelaide for a few days and I just left it on the kitchen table.
Okay.
Tactical. I didn't ask my mum to read it. I just left it there knowing that she probably would while I was at work. She did read it.
Mm.
We then spent a couple of days in Adelaide together, never speaking about it.
Yeah.
And then she went home.
Yeah, relatable.
And then she rang me and said, I read your script. I then went to perform the first show as a fundraiser here in Adelaide before I went away. And my ex-boyfriend came to that show.
No.
And I didn't even know he knew that it existed because, you know, we weren't friends on Facebook anymore or anything else. Most of that room knew him, knew my relationship with him, presumably put those pieces together. But hilariously, the night before, I had taken this like gorgeous boy home from a club and he was out the front. And so I was talking to the most attractive man in that venue who I'd taken home with me the night before. Yeah, he was incredibly proud of me, having just met me. And then the ex-boyfriend comes across the road and I had to do this awkward dance with him. Like, do I tell him?
Yeah.
Do I ask him to
leave? So did he know the show that he was going in for? Like,
I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I still don't know what he thought it was.
That's okay.
Yeah. That's not your problem.
No. Yeah. And, you know, and I did the show and obviously the show's, you know, it's grown and since then, but I got it out and afterwards he had a chat to me for a few minutes and he apologized not just for what I talk about in the show explicitly, but other levels of, you know, emotional manipulation and abuse and that kind of thing, and ended up wishing me all the best for the Edinburgh trip and thanking me for doing it.
That's pretty huge.
Which was,
How did you feel about that?
I started, I guess, it was this feeling of being seen to some extent.
Yeah, being heard.
Yeah.
Almost like validation. Like, yes, you were a dick. Like, yes, you did that horrible thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I think, I wonder how much of that was almost a touch dismissive from his part as well. Yeah. A bit like, oh, yeah. That was, you know, that was then like, sorry, thanks. Like, but
yeah, good luck with it all.
Yeah. I would like to think that there was something, there was something in there that did make him really question his behavior and look
whether
at
he would say that to
change.
You.
Yeah.
Is a different thing. Like he might have, especially if that was his response in the moment, I can imagine that's the kind of thing that would stick with a person.
Mm.
Like if I saw a show about my shitty behavior, I know that would be, confronting, but also maybe the reality check that some people need.
Yeah.
It's actually interesting. I'm just going to segue quickly on this topic. I had a friend who is a very good friend of mine and a few different people came to me and said, like, look, I've had some not so good experiences talking about their, like, assaults or not even assaults but just feeling uncomfortable, you know, and feeling uncomfortable in a way that no woman should. And they would tell me about this, about my friend. And I knew immediately it was not my job to say, oh, but he's a really good guy and he never met – the first thing I said was, okay, please let me be the one to talk to him. It sounds bad, but I sort of put my feelers out and spoke to as many people about it as possible and heard everyone's stories and listened. And then I spoke to him and said, look, I need to sit you down. We need to have a chat. We met in a really neutral place. It was a really casual conversation. I said, look, before we start, this is going to suck. And I'm really – you have to hear me. Don't want you to speak, just listen. And I sort of said, and I spoke on behalf of others who had asked me to. Of course, I didn't name anyone names. Anyone that wanted to be anonymous, I did. And I just said, because he hadn't, again, hadn't quote unquote done anything wrong, right? Yeah. But you, and I think this is something that some people find really difficult, you don't necessarily have to assault someone for them to feel violated.
Yeah.
And I spoke to him about this behavior and I wasn't sure what I was expecting, but that was several years ago now. And the transformations that person has made and the efforts that they have gone to unlearn that behavior, to change it. The first thing they did was go to a psychologist and say, this has all happened. Why am I like this? Why did I do that? Like, I don't want to be like that. And I didn't realize that. And yeah. It has been an ongoing conversation. And I'm so proud. And I feel like that's how situations can and should be handled.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody had come to him aggressively or tweeted at him or called him out online or something like that, which actually did happen now that I think about it. The instant thing happened where, unfortunately, as our culture tends to do, backpedaled on the woman and said, oh, well, you did this and this was very malicious and I can't believe you published XYZ. That was their version of their cathartic release. You know, they can do that whatever way they want, but it didn't have an impact on him because he felt, you know, victimized and, you know, we all are allowed to feel those things. But I think having someone calmly explain, like, hey, this is why it's not okay. And no, you didn't do a thing, but this is all the reasons and this is all the implications. And having someone, hear you and understand you.
Yeah.
Bit of a segue from that topic, but I just thought it was a relevant.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's a beautiful example of how conversations should be handled when it comes, because these things are very delicate. And as you say, they're just so ingrained sometimes as well. And people don't know some of the things that they are doing wrong or don't know that they're hurting others or violating others necessarily.
I used to be on not so aggressive note, but I used to be like a chronic truth teller. Like, I realize I'm still like that. But
you used to, what?
No. You know, violently honest, but I wouldn't be kind about it because that's the way my mother was with me. It was very violently honest, very matter of fact. So like, oh, have you had a shower today? You know, or just those little comments that are not bad or mean, but maybe just could be done a bit more tactfully, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was terrible for it. Like, I would just call my friends out harshly all the time because that's how I'd been brought up. So I didn't realize that that was not okay behavior until somebody sort of said, like, you're being kind of mean. I was like, what are you talking about? And it was actually, how's that for a story? It was actually the same guy friend. So he sat me down.
Pulled you out.
This was years previous. Like this, you know, this was in my very early teen years when we just sort of started high school. And I was like, I don't get why, like, this person doesn't like me and why this person had said these horrible things about me. And he was like, because I described myself as a realist. And he was like, Tash, you're not a realist. Like, you're a fucking bitch. Yeah. And I was like, who, me? Like, I was like, no. Like, I'm just telling it how it is.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, but you can do that in a kind way. Like, and kind of we had this little conversation and it was a real little aha moment. He was like, you just do it because your mum does it. And I was like, And my biggest fear was to be like my mother. Uh-huh. Like, I'm sure you relate. Like,
most people, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I don't want to be like that. So from that point on, I made a conscious and active effort to think before I fucking open my mouth.
Yeah.
And I definitely still, you know, will slip into it with people that I'm very comfortable with. But yeah, I think it's just interesting. Like, you can behave in a certain way and not even clock it for so long. Yeah. Like, your parents, they might see it and then be like, oh shit. Like,
yeah.
You know, obviously that's not something that we want to happen, but
shifting back into the fringe and because you've obviously done and are doing shows that are quite, can be emotionally taxing.
Mm.
What is your fringe survival guide? Like, your own personal tips and tricks to survive, quote unquote, the fringe?
It's really hard because I know what I should be doing and sometimes I can't manage that.
Yeah. Practicing and what you preach is not always.
Yeah. Possible. And then, I've kind of had doubts here and there about doing this mental health booklet as well. I'm like, you know, am I the person that should be saying this if I can't?
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, I think, but if I am struggling with it, maybe that's also a good thing that I'm trying to put it up as well and be like, in a way, to normalize it and to make it so that I don't feel like I'm missing out if I have a night off or something.
Yeah.
Honestly, some of the best things for me have been the people close to me for sure. Like, I had a really, really bad Tuesday last year and I had heard earlier that day that somebody I knew through the fringe world had taken his own life.
Yeah.
And I had interviewed him the year before that. He performed in the same space that I did that year prior. So I heard about that and I just really unfortunately sort of let myself spiral into this, like, you know, I was going back through our emails together. I was, you know, I was really losing myself in this hole. And then I went to do my solo show and there was nobody there. There was no audience. So then I had to cancel it, which always, you know, kind of hits you a bit.
Yeah.
Like when you're doing something that you're passionate about and, you know, that you think could help, maybe help somebody in an audience or something, like, it sucks when you're like, oh, not tonight.
And you've worked so hard and it's such a lead up. Yeah.
And so my magazine boss, actually, who's the director of the magazine, is based in Edinburgh, comes over every year. And he was staying with me and he was, like, that night he was just great. And I'm currently working through it with my therapist because I don't know how to feel feelings.
Mm.
I think of feelings and I do feelings as thoughts. And I she was trying to ask me to, like, explain what sadness feels like. And I was like, oh, well, I think this. No, but it's not about what you think. It's about how you feel. I don't know the distinction. I can't do it. There have been a couple of times where I've just sort of had to step back a little bit and I've just been like, I don't know what I need.
Mm.
So I don't know what this is. I don't know what I need, but I know that I don't feel right.
Mm.
And that's where I'm up to. That's the best thing I've got yet so far. Just knowing that I have people around me that I can say that to.
Yeah. Support network.
Yeah. And this year I'm really excited because my Canadian friend is going to be coming in just for the Fringe. And he was one of the biggest supports when the original sexual assault happened in 2017. Sure. And I spoke to him about it and he was just like, I don't want you to go home alone. Like, do you want to come to my house? He slept on the couch. I slept in his bed. Next morning he was like, how are you feeling? What can we do? And so I'm really looking forward to having him
reconnect
back here. Yeah. That's going to it's going to be really nice. But also, like, a beach day does me wonders.
I'm right there with you.
Absolute wonders. Yeah. And I haven't been to the zoo in ages. I'm a zoo fiend, but I haven't been back for a while.
Yes.
And that's definitely on my maybe list this year.
Just like in animals, being around animals.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I get that. There's something calming about that.
Yeah, if there was an aquarium in Adelaide, I would be there so often. Mm-hmm. But there isn't.
Like, you'd be into Monarto. Like that kind
I
of
have
like,
never been to Monarto.
I feel like maybe
I really want to.
Maybe you should try and take some, you know, out of town fringes and do like a Monarto trip because I feel like that's very immersive.
Mm.
You know, like you're there.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's not like you don't look around, see the city. Like you are there.
Mm. I actually, I've been trying to pitch this series of articles for the magazine that I work, that I'm editor of. Been trying to pitch it since I started 3 seasons ago.
Yeah.
Finally got it in this year.
Hey.
And it's a kidnapping series. So I've just been wanting to take these cool international groups, just show them something amazing in South Australia because how cool is this place?
Yeah.
And I've actually organised slight spoilers. I'm taking a girl I met in Edinburgh who does this incredibly powerful solo theatre work about an abusive relationship, an emotionally abusive relationship, and then her coming out of that and then figuring out who she is and how that relationship changed her. She's an absolute legend. I'm taking her down to Normanville.
Ah,
and right. We're going horseback riding on the beach.
Oh,
and that
so romantic.
Is just going to be amazing.
Yeah.
That'll
be beautiful.
Just, yeah, taking a bit of time out.
Very Lady Godiva.
Like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
My hair's probably almost long enough for that, so that's an option.
That's what I want to say. Like, two badass women on horseback. Like,
yes. Yes. Who
amazing.
Both have basically never ridden a horse. So.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. Just don't ever stand behind it. That is my top tip.
Okay.
I mean, that should be a common knowledge.
Some
one,
people
right?
don't know. You never know. Yeah. Don't stand behind the horse and don't let the horse know that you're afraid of it if you are afraid of it.
All it animals know. It. All,
and they
they
need a lot of respect. Those,
yeah,
they're big things. They are big, powerful, strong things.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have like a pre-show? Because my version of a pre-show used to just be like a bottle of champagne while I was doing my makeup. Do you have something that you do now that like gets you ready or calms you down or hypes you up?
Music is probably my go-to for that. On my way from – so I was performing in Gluttony last year. That was like a 5-minute walk from my flat. So I only really got 2 songs in and it was always – Techno Fan by the Wombats.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And R&B by Alex Rossi, who was here performing at the Garden last year. And I think Techno Fan was actually my number one song last year on Spotify.
Yeah.
And then Alex got into my top 100, so I messaged him and he was in Las Vegas. And I was like, you made it in my top 100.
Lucky you.
And he was stoked. But just, really like upbeat, poppy things. Even though, you know, the show that I was doing, it's not upbeat and poppy, but had that, the my entrance song was Hello by Martin Solvig.
Oh,
and yeah. I would come in from outside. So I'd be standing outside the tent just in my underwear, kind of bouncing a bit, just yeah. like amping myself up. Just like, I just came to say, and then skipping through the middle yeah. of everybody. Yeah. And so, yeah, so music's a really big one, I think, for amping me up and getting me going.
Yeah. And then what about after a show? Like post show, do you do a wind down or do you do something to try and avoid the pub, or is that a go-to?
The pub is a little bit more of a go-to than it should be.
Yeah.
Which is something that I've been.
It's hard. It's so sociable and that's where everyone is. And yeah. like you just want to unwind.
Yeah.
I get it.
It's always been tricky doing a solo show as well. I had in my first season in 2018 here in Adelaide, and I finished a show and I thought the show went really well, and it yeah. was one of the first ones that I didn't know anybody in the audience.
Ooh.
So usually I would know at least one person.
Yeah.
And on the way out, they'd come up and they'd ask to give me a hug and I would hug them, and then other people in the audience would ask as well. I think often they need it. God knows I need it by the end of a show.
Yeah.
And then this one time I knew nobody. The show had been particularly taxing that night, and everybody just filed out and looked at me and sort of smiled quite sort of, you know, politely and almost a bit like, oh, you poor
empathetic
thing, because, you know, I've just gone through it. Everyone just left and nobody hugged me, and I just closed the door. I have a pile of clothes I get changed during the show.
Yeah.
I just hugged this pile of clothes on the floor of the stage and just cried for a minute. But then I'm like, have to get out of the way, get up, get
Bump
going.
Out.
The next person has to come in, like pull it together and get out, basically.
That's the perfect way to sort of condense Fringe life. Like it's very that. It's very full on. Here's everything. Here is my everything.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, it's over and nobody really cares. I'm alone. Like, just,
yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I understand that that's how it feels, and that's certainly not how it is. But I think it's hard as a performer and an artist to distinguish the way you feel about your work and the way other people feel about it. It's hard to sometimes take yourself as serious as you are, you know, or like undermine yourself. I know I do that.
It's also this thing of like art, particularly like theatre and performance and anything that involves an audience, is such a huge exchange of emotions between whoever's on stage and whoever's sitting in the dark watching. And it's crazy that we have this whole festival focused on what is an emotional exchange, but we don't give ourselves time to be emotional and to debrief from that, which I guess you get in any sort of sense of like theatre and performing arts throughout the year, but in a condensed thing like The Fringe, it's this time of when can you actually have that when you are talking about sexual abuse and rape and mental health and all of these big life things that you do deal with on a daily day basis, but you don't flesh out and expose in 50 minutes with 50 other people in the room and an ensemble on stage.
Yeah.
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 And it's interesting. I don't know if you guys are BoJack Horseman fans.
I have seen bits.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
And so 2 or 3 days ago, they released the second half of what I believe is the final season.
Oh, okay.
And so the first half came out, I think, October, November. These last 8 episodes, I think, we binge watched 2 nights ago, I reckon it was. And the way that they have explored some topics is just incredible.
Yeah.
And there's this whole episode surrounding death and suicide and completion of life. And, you know, and it's through these silly characters, and, you know, 4 of them are horses. But it's this incredible discussion. And, you know, the closing conversation that is had is just this beautiful way of looking at how people interact with others, how they impact and change others, and then how difficult it can be to look back on either a difficult or a positive time and just kind of appreciate it for how it has shaped you, you know, without harboring any anger towards that person, you know, any forgiveness that you need to give and how you can sort of move forward. And as, you know, we finished watching these episodes and I just sat for a minute and couldn't really communicate anything about it. I was just sitting there and I was like, I just really need a minute. Me and my housemate just sort of like said a few lines back and forth, like from these episodes, just like, oh, and this bit. Yeah. And then when she said this, and it was just this real fragmented
comprehension.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, but now I spent yesterday just trawling through Reddit threads of people, you know, talking about things. And there's this beautiful poem in one of the episodes that is just haunting. And the discussions around that and you know, people's personal experiences and how they saw themselves reflected in this poem is just brilliant.
I almost want to change the whole way that we consume theatre and arts to have a, like, 20-minute debrief session afterwards. Yes.
I could get around that.
Yeah. Where it's like, all right, all the things you felt, the show, great, cool. Let's talk about it right here, right now. Let's and, like, talk about it in 3 days as well once you've processed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, having those long-form forum threads in person where it's like, all right, cool. So what did you think about this?
Yeah.
And what about this? And what about that? And, like, continue that experience and acknowledge and give presence to the feelings that were invoked throughout it.
Yeah, it's lovely.
That's a really nice way of putting it.
I think that's something that's so wonderful about Writers Week at Adelaide Uni as well. Adelaide Uni, Adelaide Festival. You know, people are given that opportunity to speak to authors that they really admire, to hear things, and then to talk about it, to have these open forums and have these discussions. Yeah, I think it's incredibly cathartic. But I wonder if everything you just sort of said about BoJack Horseman, do you consider that people might feel like that about your work?
Honestly, not really. It's like it's which is really weird because on the one hand, like particularly with my first piece, like I'm very proud of that work.
Yeah.
And it took a long time for me to be properly proud of it. And, you know, and I've gotten a lot of really, really, really lovely reviews and, you know, I've had amazing conversations with people after the show one-on-one and that sort of thing. But it can still be, really hard to appreciate that maybe I've created something that could have an impact like that on somebody that's something I think would not be on my mind. Like it's not, I wouldn't ever assume that I have that sort of power or that I have that kind of influence on something. Like it's just me. Like, I can't do that.
Well, I, for one, am very interested in seeing the show. Caitlin, I assume we'll go together.
You might be sitting on each other's laps at this rate.
Yeah. So fine. And, you know, maybe we can use a Sober Sunday to have our little forum and discuss it. Because I'm sure that the topics are going to be very relevant to my life and my situation with my family. So I think that I might be crying, but that's okay.
Yeah, there's something scary about intimate theatre performs at just art spaces where it's like, haha, the people who are performing can see me having emotions.
Yes. Yeah.
I've like,
you cried in Wolves. Like.
I've walked out of a few shows recently where I've known people in the cast and afterwards they'll be like, yeah, we saw you crying. You were crying. I'm like, you made me feel an emotion.
I didn't know you could see that.
Like, I'm like, don't acknowledge that I was sobbing quietly in the front row being like, I can't right now. Yeah.
Lastly, just to wrap up our little podcast, with that, thank you for coming on and being so vulnerable. And
thank you so much for having me. It's been great. Thank you.
It's a totally scary thing. And I mean, as an artist, you get that, putting your work out there all the time. And it's, you know, I think we see this podcast as a very similar thing. It's sort of like this is our sort of performance art almost.
I've never thought of it like that, but sure.
Yeah, like I
can appreciate
it's
that.
Your performance art. Yeah, I'm just here.
because I feel like I have this real struggle at the moment in sobriety of becoming a new person, and so I'm not quite sure who this person is yet. And sometimes I like catch these little things. I'm like, oh, that's a cool thing that I'm into now. And then there's some other things where I'm like, oh, that's a bad habit. Like, oh, I'm doing a replacement thing here.
Yeah.
And whereas this podcast, like I feel like often when I come on and I sit down, I turn on and I feel like I'm in performance mode and I'm this and I'm that and I can articulate everything, and then I go home and I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Never listen to it back. Like, oh, it's so hard.
Yeah.
I think it's just, really nice to get to speak to a lot of other people, and I'm really looking forward to this season of hearing other people's stories and the way that they express their sort of feelings and grief or anything else they've been through. So to wrap up, what are your little plug your socials, your hashtags?
So our socials, our Instagram is BigMoodTM. Off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure. And then we've got facebook.com/bigmoodtm. Our website again is bigmood.co.uk, and on there you can have a look at the shows that we've got. Yeah, I think that's all of those things. Anyone who is a part of the Fringe Festival land, keep an eye out for our cute little pink booklets that we'll be distributing around next week. Very exciting. And of course, if you ever need to talk to somebody, if you can talk to a friend, talk to them. If not, there are a lot of helplines out there. We have listed quite a few in the booklet, but always, you know, a little Google tap could save someone's life, could save your own day. Nothing's too small to warrant talking to somebody about it.
That's a really beautiful message.
If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can as well. That was my radio voice.
It was.
At justwhy, or you can email us at justwhypod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram at whyamilikethispodcast. We're not on Facebook. Pod, thank you. I don't manage it anymore. the way that we usually wrap this up is like a quote or mantra of the week.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear one from Tash and also one from you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Laura, you go first.
Brutal.
Yeah, know, it happens every week like this.
I never have to say one. It's great.
Can I be really corny?
Yes.
And use the be the change you wish to see in the world?
Ugh. It's a good one.
Does that fit today's chat?
It does. I think that's, something that I preach all the time. I really, really believe that. I'm going to do a throwback, which is actually a status of mine that I shared from 9 years ago.
Oh, God.
It was be more.
Oh.
I feel like I've always been preaching that.
See, my last name is Moore, so I get it. Just be me.
Yeah. Just be like, okay, guys. Yeah,
like, if you need to, sure. Don't be me.
Well, it's been great chatting, and I'm super looking forward to rolling headfirst into the Fringe. I will see you at Fringe Club. I will see you at your show. I will be around. So will Caitlin.
Yes.
Never stops working 20 million jobs. And when we see each other, we will check in.
Yeah.
See how we are.
Yes. That sounds like a great deal.
Definitely. Great. Well, thanks for listening, sports fans, and we will see you next week.
Sports fans? Sure. By anything said in this episode, please contact Lifeline at 13 11 14 or www.lifeline.org.au. Why Am I Like This is a Wiggly Good production produced by Caitlin Ellen Moore and hosted by Tash. The audio for this podcast was recorded and edited by Ryan Martin John. The Why Am I Like This jingle was created by Annie Siegman and Ryan Martin John. Why Am I Like This was recorded and produced on Kaurna lands, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Thanks for listening.